This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast.
PatCast with Botch in Columbus. You're going to hear from him in a second. The PatCast, a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM and Coquitlam, proud sponsors of the BCHL Coquitlam Express. And your first overall pick for selection and inventory, check them out weekdays or weekends in Coquitlam, two blocks west of Coquitlam Center, 2595 Barnett Highway. Visit them at EagleRidgeGM.com. We're taking the show on the road. We're going to be out at Eagle Ridge GM later this month. We'll have more details on that in an upcoming PatCast. But let's get to Columbus, Ohio. Botch has made his way from Nashville to Columbus, and he is there at Canuck practice. Botch, have we got you?
Yeah. I think you do. You do have me, and just surveying here who's entering the ice, and I have not seen Sven Berchi yet.
Well, let's start there, because
that's my live report.
I like that. That's why we bring you on. We go live to Jason Botchford at the Ice House in Columbus, Ohio. You wrote about it extensively. You had the breakdown, the still frames, the hit by McLeod on Sven Berchi. We find out this morning, no supplemental discipline. I think Canuck fans, they're sort of conditioned now that they saw it, but I don't think anybody woke up this morning and thought that Cody McLeod was actually going to get suspended by the NHL.
What do you mean nobody? Like, literally, like, you don't think anyone... I know that we've been through this so many times, and it just never, if it does fall the Canucks' way, it's very rarely that, especially this particular part of the NHL, the Department of Player Safety, sides with the Canucks. Like, Yannick Hansen gets, you know, all the 50-50 calls, like Yannick Hansen, Alex Edler, those guys get the supplemental discipline, and it always seems like the 50-50 calls that happened against the Canucks, never do. But at the same point, J-Pat, I mean, this is pretty ridiculous. Like, it's not this accident. Like, that's how Cody McLeod skates, like, with his elbows swinging from one side to the other, because he swings right into Berchi, and he's the one that is coming from behind. To me, I kind of looked at it like, what's the rule? Isn't there a rule that if you hit a car, if you're behind the car and you hit the car, it's your fault, no matter what has happened? And I kind of think that that's how it should be for Cody McLeod. I know it happens all the time, but I am surprised still to this day. I still get surprised that nothing happens. How can you not be surprised by this?
Because we've lived through this too many times, whether it was Kadri on Daniel Sedin, whether it was Matthew Perreault on Yannick Hansen. You know, this is the trifecta. I woke up this morning, I had zero expectation that the Department of Player Safety was going to step in. You know how the Department of Player Safety acts as well. I've said for a while, drop the S. Just call it the Department of Player. Like, there's no safety. How safe is Sven Berchi feeling this morning because a Department of Player Safety exists?
Yeah, and once again, I mean, I said this at the time of the Kadri hit. I think at some point the team is going to have to come out with something stronger than, you know, I think Willie gave it a try last night, saying, you know, he thought that he was sure McLeod knew where Berchi was, and that's about as explosive as you can expect Willie to be. Like, it's pretty rare that he kind of steps out of his lane, and when he does, it's only slightly, like he... You know that they have those kind of tire track things in the road, sides of the road. So if you kind of hear a bit to the side of the road, you can hear the sound of your tire hitting the tracks before you go off road. And that's kind of how Willie is. I mean, he's always like right in that lane. And if he hears it's just ever so slightly, then he's back in. So I'm not going to expect much from him. But at some point, the executive, the front office is going to have to stand up for these guys. Because here's the problem. They don't have a team that's capable of doing... I'm sitting there watching that game, and I'm saying, okay, there's no reaction from the Canucks. It was a cheap, dirty hit. Sven Berchi's concussed. Like, do I kill these guys? Do I write what a bad response is it? Or do I look at them and say, like, who the hell... Like, who's going to do anything? Like, they're just not constructed to respond to a hit like that. There's guys who could... I guess Fiza, I think maybe Skilly ever hit or do anything like that. You know, it's maybe a lot to put on a rookie like Trampkin, but I got to include him just because of the size. So there are guys that could potentially do it, but realistically, there's no one there that's going to be able to stand up for other guys in situations like this.
And, Botch, like, I don't have this bloodlust. I don't need fights every single night at the rink. But if they happen, they happen. But I went and I was looking at it this morning because I was thinking there was no response. And Jack Skelly played with Cody McLeod last year in Colorado, so maybe they're buddies and maybe it's too much to think that he would step in. But I had to go back, and boy, I had to go back a ways. I think it's 23 games now to the game in Carolina. That was the last time a Canuck got in a fight. Lucas Spezza stepped in for Louis Erickson after Ron Hainsey had run him over. There was a big hit there, and Spezza stepped in and dropped the gloves. 23 games, more than a quarter of the season has gone by without a Vancouver Canuck getting involved in a scrap. And again, I'm not screaming for guys to be fighting on a nightly basis, but it does say something about the construct of this group when you ask and you have to ask, like, who would? Who would step in that situation and challenge Cody McLeod?
I'm not sure. I don't think anyone could. I almost feel bad for them. Like, there's just no one who can take that role, and they've just chosen to go with a team that just doesn't have that role, and I think that's fine. I mean, I'd rather, if they were going to do that, construct a fourth line that maybe could score some goals, and they don't have that right now. They have had that option in a potential goal scorer in Boucher. They've kind of passed him over, but it's just really, you know, if Branson's out or so, you know, and there's just no one who's going to do it. And I get if you're asked, you know, who out of these guys is going to step up when they absolutely have to, and I would suspect it would have to be Spezza.
So that's one of the storylines to come out of a game like last night. The other was, you know, again, another third period. They boil it down to a 20-minute game. It's 2-1 going to the third period. They get an early power play. They do nothing with it. And then the weird controversial goal, the camera through the net and through the webbing of the glove. And at 3-1, I don't think that many thought that the Canucks were going to come all the way back. But, you know, after the hockey game, you look at a night like last night, and here's Bo Horvat. He sets up Alex Edler off the rush, by the way, a power play goal off the rush. Saw one by Patrick Marleau a couple of nights ago, too. We're seeing some power play goals off the rush, so maybe change is coming to the NHL. But Botch, on the night, Henrik Sedin plays 6 minutes more than Bo Horvat did. And again, you know, you're seeing the baton being passed from Henrik to Horvat in terms of being the scoring leader on this hockey team. In a tight game in the third period, how does Henrik end up playing 6 minutes more on the night than Bo Horvat?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that by now when we've come to the realization that Willie does not see the Horvat or the Horvat line as a line that's going to score a lot of goals. So, he's going to ride. I think that there's two things. One, he doesn't see Horvat as an offensive star, as a guy who's going to score the big goal when it's needed. And two, I think he's desperate to get the Sedins going. Like, they are in a really prolonged slump. Like, even for where they are now in their careers, and that's like, you know, top end 55-60 point players, they probably won't get near that this year. This has been bad. I think like, how, what's Daniel Sedin's, how many goals scored over the past 20 games has he had? And he was, you know, that line, that group, the Sedins, were generating chances, and realistically, they almost tied it. I mean, Erickson should have scored the goal. He had the puck in his stick. He's the guy with the $6 million, you know, paycheck. He was the big free agent acquisition, acquire, you know, one of the big, huge signings, not just for the Canucks, of the entire NHL. And he's sitting here with, what, 10 goals? You know, it's just weird watching him play because he does get chances. He does have really good games, but you don't see it translate with goals.
I know. I'm just trying to think of how we're going to write the story of Louis Erickson at the end of the first of a 6-year contract. You know, we're going to write volumes about the chances he had at some point.
Let me ask you this, though. Like, why do you think, it can be really tough for some players playing in Vancouver? It was super top for Branson. Got a lot of criticism. Obviously we know the history of the city. And so I think even Bo, like, even though he was like in his second year, he was getting ripped last year, with the 27-game goalless streak. But Eric, am I wrong here, or does Eric say, like, I don't get the kind of reaction. It's almost like, it's almost like people expected him to underperform. But if you go back to that signing on July 1 and you read the reaction, not just of most media or a lot of media fans, almost universally everyone expected him to be a goal scorer, to be a guy who could score 30 goals. And, you know, if people complained or criticized the deal, it was, oh, the last 3 years are going to be killer. But the first couple, the first three, they got themselves a real deal player here. But here we are with, he's got 10 goals after, 54 games. And I don't hear a lot of Louis Erickson criticism.
Well, you don't hear much from Louis Erickson himself. Like, I don't know how much time you've spent around him, but I know I haven't really talked to him. I don't feel like I know the guy at all. He's a bit of a ghost in that locker room. Like, you know, there's lots of guys that are in their stalls, available at all times. You always have to ask for Louis Erickson if you want to talk to him. And he knows now if you want to talk to him, it means that he's going to have to talk about the kind of season he's had. Like, do you feel like you have any read on Louis Erickson, the person, halfway through his first season as a Canuck?
No, I don't. Maybe I should sit down with him today and try to get a better read. But no, he's very guarded. He's not an open guy. Not a guy that you want to talk to about breaking down the game, that sort of thing. I think that plays into it, part of it. But man, like, it's 6 years, and this is year one, and it's just bizarre. The situation is pretty weird that here we are in February and the coach still doesn't have a feel at all about where to play him. Like, where does he fit? There was 2 months of the season he would not, 2 or 3 months, he would not play them with the Sedins. And then for the past month, it's like, I'm not taking them off. You know, Willie's not taking them off that line. He's going to be there. But hold on, like, Daniel Sedin has, like, got one goal in 20 games and they're all with Louis and you're just going to keep him going there? Keep going. And it's just a bizarre about-face by the coach that at one part of the year he couldn't foresee them playing together, and now he can't foresee them playing apart. I don't think he has a feel for, you talked about the media, I don't think the coaching staff has a feel for Louis. I don't think they know where to play him on the power play. I don't think they know where he fits. I don't think they know where best he should be positioned to get his goals. And I don't think they know which line to play him on at 5-on-5.
And yet, a night like last night, he has 6 shots on goal, 9 attempts. Like, you can't ask for a whole lot more from a guy, but at $6 million, one of those has to find its way behind the goaltender.
Yeah, I mean, he was great. He was one of their, like, had a great third period. He definitely got better as the game went on. They moved him all over the lineup. They had Granlund with the Sedins for a while, and that looked pretty good. Erickson sparked Sutter when he was put there. I think last night was everything that you want from Louis, but the problem is that there was no bottom line, there's no goals, and you know that there's going to be a number of games where you don't see any of that, you know, because that's the way that the year has gone so far, that you do get a really good game like that where he does have 3 or 4 scoring chances, and then, you know, a week goes by where you don't think a lot about Louis Erickson. But he does have a massive contract. He was part of this idea, you know, Brandon Sutter will be healthy, Alex Edler will be healthy, Louis Erickson will be added, and the team will be better. All of those things did happen. Sutter's been healthy. Edler, for the most part, has been healthy. Erickson was added, and they're not. And this is the storyline. You know, you were getting into it a bit on Twitter when Ebner kind of pointed this out yesterday. But the team is literally spinning its wheels. It is no better, not an inch better than it was a year ago. And that has to be, you know, that's got to be pretty alarming, because Bo Horvat's a lot better. There's other guys that are a lot better, but this team is not any better.
Yeah, and you pointed out that this is all being done with a healthy Brandon Sutter. Last year, they used those injuries to Sutter and Ham Hughes and Edler, but particularly Sutter. It's 20 games. They didn't feel they got a real read on what they would be as a team with Brandon Sutter. He's been healthy, and he's had a few moments here and there, but you're right. Point totals year over year are almost identical, and really the only change is that Bo Horvat leads this team in scoring, and Henrik doesn't anymore, and the Twins continue in decline. I was just thinking as you were talking about Erickson, though, like, I can envision you and me sitting on a patio some summer night here in Vancouver when the snow has finally melted and summer is here. And we look back and we remember that night in Nashville. Like, Louis Erickson was unbelievable in a 4-2 loss where he didn't have a point. Like, is that going to be the high point for Louis Erickson? Is, you know, a night where he was around the puck all season or around the puck all night and does nothing with it?
Yeah, I think I will remember Nashville as, like, you know, the high point or one of the high points of Erickson's year. I don't think he's going to get 20 goals. Like, he would have to have an amazing, he is streaky, but I don't think he's going to get on a good enough, hot enough streak to pull 20 out of this season.
Don't make me predict goal totals at this point, Botch. Just don't. Oh, I had him at 30. I had Rodin at 15. I'm thinking that Rodin's probably going to have to really hurry now to get to 15.
Right, yeah, that's not looking good. Man, you really bought into Rodin, eh? Wow. I guess you didn't have all the information, though, as Willie would say to us.
Yeah, see, if I knew that he had the split kneecap, that would have changed everything. Big story of the day or the week was Kuz's chat with Jim Benning before Jim embarked on his European scouting trip. We've talked at length about this on other podcasts, but the idea, the plan was to, you know, buy these players some time so that we, the big bad media, wasn't, you know, they weren't all over these guys on a daily basis asking about trades. So he comes out in, what was it? You were on the road. It was New Jersey. So early December when he says, I'm not going to anybody. I'm not going to ask them to waive the no trades. You know, this is our position. And then very predictably, now they're open for business.
Well, it wasn't predict. Like, I'm shocked that we're in the first week of February and he's already walked that back. Like, I could not. Like, when Kuz told, like, I kind of wrote about this last night, but when, like, Kuz was saying, yeah, you know, there's no way that they're going to be able to keep with this promise of not asking the guys to waive the no trades. I'm asking Benning right now, and he, like, I don't think Benning was available at that exact moment. I think he called him later. But I was just looking at, thinking to myself, like, there's just no way that you're just beating your head against the wall, because he's asked about this every single week on his radio hits, and he always says the same thing. And if the plan is really to keep these players from the media asking questions to them, and by the way, it really wasn't that bad. Like, last year, like, Hemius wasn't even asked to waive his no trade until a week before the deadline. And I think, honestly, Bavada was only really asked about it, like, one or two times. Like, because there wasn't, like, Bavada being asked about it every day. There was one really heartfelt scrum he had, and I think one other. It wasn't a lot. Hemius was a few more times. But again, it was that, you know, this final month where it became an issue. So if you really are going to, you know, come up with this kind of fake news alternative universe where you're not going to ask players to waive their no trades, this is the month you have to hold on to that plan publicly, because this is when we start asking those questions. So I was super surprised that he walked it all back and said, yeah, you know what, we're going to meet with some agents and see what's what. It wasn't even, they had just lost, I mean, they've lost four in a row now. They've just lost, at that point, I guess, three in a row. I mean, it wasn't that bleak, right? If, I mean, I have a 500 road trip, who knows? Maybe you're still in it. I don't know, man. I could feel the lack of, like, just reading the quote, I can feel the lack of confidence that Jim has right now in the team. And you can also get the same thing from the players. When they're talking about this road trip being a make or break for their season, man, this is not a strong, confident group. This is a very fragile group. And I would suggest that walking this plan back of not asking players to waive their no trades is a fragile decision. It looks weak.
PatCast is a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM. Beat the trade deadline with trade-in bonus days. Get up to $1,500 bonus on your new vehicle. Find them online, eagleridgegm.com, for all the details. The thing I found, and Jim didn't have any control on this part of it, but, you know, he said what he said to you that night in the Provies in December. Well, I mean, Yannick Hansen's one of these guys. Yannick Hansen's been on the shelf for the better part of 2 months. Players that are injured aren't available to the media, so we couldn't go to yet. Like, so Yannick Hansen, you know, he wasn't affected by this edict of Jim Benning. And the minute he gets clearance and rejoins the group, what's the first question to Yannick Hansen? He gets, you know, hammered over the head with the trade question. Coming out of the All-Star break, Ryan Miller, I saw his responses. I wasn't in the room the day, but people were asking Ryan Miller about the trade. So effectively, it bought the group, what, 6 weeks of peace and quiet from these questions? But as you say, like,
but J-Pat, it's the 6 weeks. No one in December is asking trade deadline questions. Not really.
I'm with you there.
January, it's barely happening, you know, every once in a while. But now is the time. Like, I don't get it by them any time, really.
Well, a couple of things there. I'm with you. In December, it wasn't really ever going to be an issue. And then as they started winning games between Christmas and the All-Star break, again, you know, they were having some success. Guys weren't going to want out at that point. And so, yeah, I mean, the whole thing to me, but I did, I guess I found it very predictable that he did walk it back. I wasn't surprised. I mean, the timing again, perhaps I was surprised by the timing of Jim's quotes to you. I'm surprised here, but maybe in their mind it was, well, they're going out on this road trip. You know, they're away from Vancouver and most of the media now. I mean, you're out on the road with the hockey team, but in terms of, you know, the daily bombardment of questions, maybe they thought that, you know, this was the right time to sort of lift the no trade ban, if you will, because out on the road, they're not going to have to face many questions because there isn't much traveling media anymore.
Okay, but what if you were like Yannick and you did buy in to, you kind of buy into the fact that they were doing it? So, I mean, all the players seem to have a pay, but they were saying that the media didn't ask questions. But then you walk it back right before the most critical road trip of the season. Like, how does that, I mean, the timing to me makes no sense. And I'm sure that they all end up seeing this stuff, and they don't read it themselves. Someone tells them. So I don't know, man. I just think that they're going to have a negative. I just don't think it was a good idea, and I think that the players will have a negative reaction to it.
Well, and maybe some of it stems from you were there, I was there. Come out of the All-Star break, San Jose, Minnesota, two division leaders. Those are the teams, Botch. If the Canucks somehow magically snuck in as one of those wildcard teams, they would face a division leader in a 4 out of 7 playoff series to open the postseason, and they were absolutely schooled. Like, there was nowhere to hide. They don't measure up, obviously, against very good teams, and so I think it's pretty clear. You know, players will say what they want to say, but the top of the organization, that had to be a reality check to them, losing back-to-back to San Jose and Minnesota.
Yeah, and you know, before we started this, you made the point that they went in Colorado, then all of a sudden, Willie starts tinkering with the lineup, and he starts playing Philip Larson. And I'll tell you, leading up to the San Jose game, there were players on the team that, you know, thought that Biegas should be playing, that Larson shouldn't be in the lineup, that Biegas should be in there. So I'm not saying that this is the reason. Like, they were definitely overmatched in those games like that. You can see the divide between where the Canucks are and the really kind of more elite teams in the conference are. But at the same point, like, are you giving your team the best chance to win when you're playing a team that is as heavy as the Sharks are, and you're going Biega, and you're sitting Biega and putting Larson back out there? I don't think that help matters, but Willie's been a guy that's, and it's kind of unusual, and I can't point it out at the time, because, I mean, Willie is, like, super loyal, like, is ridiculously loyal, like, to even to his lines. Like, he doesn't even like juggling lines in a game. Like, it's, even if they're down by a couple, like, it takes a lot for him to change things up over the course of the game. And there's this theory around that's part of the reason that the players buy in and they want to compete for Willie, because he shows them that loyalty and he sticks with them. But man, like, I'm watching last night and he's flipping the lines all around, and I know that there were some, you know, deployment questions and how much Henrik played, as you pointed out, how little Bo played, but they had a really good third period. Like, they created a lot of chances. They really should have tied that game. Like, there's no way that the Spezza penalty should have happened. Nashville gets a goal on the power play, but, you know, in that third, by far, the Canucks were the better team. And that was with Willie doing something he very rarely does, tinkering with his lines.
But again, that just, to me, it reinforces what we have seen all season long is that, you know, it's one thing to generate chances. You got to have some people that can put the puck in the net. And it's just this dearth of elite level scoring that, you know, nights like they're in all these hockey games. If they had some guys that could actually score goals and if the power play, and I know the power play is starting to emerge from a season long slumber, although it seems to be the second unit, not so much that top unit. But again, it just underscores to me, and I've done enough post game shows where we talk chances, chances, chances. I kind of get tired of talking about chances. Just put the puck in the net.
Yeah, but they lack the one-shot goal scorer. They have very few of those guys. I think Berchi's kind of one of them, which is going to hurt, and he's not here for this practice. So, it's going to hurt without him in the lineup. I do think it's a factor. I think he's one of the few guys that you know, given a chance, given time, given space, he can score a goal. And they just don't have a lot of guys like that. And I think that's why Besser is so important. I also think it's why trying to acquire other guys like that is important. Like, you can't just say, well, this is our group. We'll wait on Besser. We got enough. Like, Besser may not work out. Like, they need a lot of skill ingested by this lineup and put into this lineup. And there's clearly not enough, not even close right now. You know, a Canada at the bottom of the league. And goals scored, and I think they'll finish out of the season at 27-28. And that's with Granlund having a pretty unexpected year scoring. That's with Brandon Sutter doing, you know, it's probably going to get 20. That's as much as you could hope for him. That's with Bo Horvat scoring a lot of goals. That's with Sven Berge meeting expectations. So despite all of those things, they're still at the bottom of the league in goals, and that's that should be a huge alarm bell to the franchise, to the organization. Because it's just Brock Besser sweeping in. Even if he scores 25 in his first season, it's not going to be enough just to bring the team where they need to be. They need more guys like him on the way, and I'm not sure that they don't seem to be seeking that right now.
Well, they've got Adam Gaudette on the way, too. So don't forget, it was funny, because Jim Benning was on Hockey Prospects Radio, which is a Sirius XM show that runs on 1040 here. I think it ran at like midnight on Friday, so it was heard locally. People, I guess, could hear the podcast if they wanted. But I don't know how many GMs in the National Hockey League would sit in for 30 minutes as Jim did, and he talked, he went so deep on his prospect, like this was just his wheelhouse. You could hear him bubbling through the radio. Like usually when he comes on local radio, you know, he's talking about his team and maybe he talks about Besser or Demko. He did this Hockey Prospects radio interview. He did two full segments. Besser's name didn't come up once. Demko's name didn't come up once. Vertanen's name did not come up. They started the interview talking about Carl Neal and it went from there, and Jim couldn't have sounded any happier. Like, he was in his wheelhouse. He was in his happy place. Like, how many GMs do you think would give up half an hour to talk about their, you know, fifth-round picks?
No, I mean, he's one of the, if not the most successful, one of the most accessible executives in the league. I mean, he's doing interviews all the time. Like, you know, I even linked to a CBC, like, random CBC story on Jim, and he's doing this interview, and, you know, he's telling you about Kuz playing to ask him, didn't get him that game, called him up, and as soon as Jim landed in Switzerland, he called Kuz. Like, he's a super accessible guy, and you're right, that would be in his wheelhouse. Those are the hits. They've had hits. They seem to have had hits anyway. None of these guys proven at the pros or in the NHL yet, but, you know, the guys deep in drafts, well, I guess Trampkin, you can include him, third rounder. The guys that they're picking later in rounds have the most encouraging signs. It's the problem is the guys that some of the top guys, you know, the Bertanen and McCann picks haven't worked out yet. Neil Levy with Tkachuk kind of tearing, you know, doing really well with the Flames and being kind of everything that the Canucks need right now, that doesn't look great. So of course, yeah, I'm sure he was super excited to talk about Carl Neal and the boys.
A couple other things before we wrap up here. We touched on Rodin. I mean, just a crushing story, obviously, for this guy. This was his dream to try to play in the NHL and didn't happen for him. You see any way that the Canucks would touch him and try to give it a second shot in the summer?
I mean, I guess it's possible. I tend to think that he's going to want a new start and a fresh team and a new chance. It's not like he got a lot of great chances, even when he was quote-unquote healthy. It was the whole thing will just go down as I'm sure the whole story's not been told yet, but you know, it's just bizarre looking back and playing five games in the preseason, back to back, four games, six nights, and then the big conspiracy about did the shin pad fall or did it not fall, did it slip, did it not slip, what happened with the knee, you know, how much of this could have been avoided if they didn't try to rehab it, and they had, like, if they figured out when he first got to Vancouver that he needed surgery, would he be coming back right now? Right about now would be the 6 month mark, and potentially he could have come back late in the season. So I just think that there's huge questions about that, and I do feel for him because he Philip Larson didn't know whether he wanted to leave the K or not to play in the NHL. Anton Rodin, it's all he wanted to do. Like, he desperately wanted to play in the NHL. And, to have that taken away from him in a surgery that they originally told him he'd be back in a few weeks, and then he's fighting for a year to try to get healthy again, only to realize he's got to go through that entire year again. Like, he's literally got to do the whole thing over. It's got to be a devastating emotional impact on him. So I do feel bad for him. I tend to think he deserves and needs a different start, whether that's in Europe or for another NHL team. I just don't see it here. I just don't see Willie, especially if Willie's back. I don't see Willie playing playing Anton Rodin a lot in where he's going to be needed to play, and that's a top six role.
All right, and finally, we got Belichick on the weekend, Botch. Pat Cash loyally threw its support behind the Atlanta Falcons, and it was looking good through three quarters. But best coach and I guess the best quarterback in football did us in. Unbelievable football game. But Pat Cash, it was crushing. A crushing defeat. I'm sure the people of Atlanta feeling it more than the Pat Cash, but we like to be winners here on the Pat Cash. And so I have to say I was a little disappointed in the Falcons not being able to get this thing across the finish line.
Yeah, I thought the end, the last touchdown, I think the knee was down. I saw the stills of it. I'm shocked that there was, seemed like no review of that play. I'm not sure. I know that Belichick and Brady get all the credit. And I guess, rightfully so. And it was a great ending. I'm not sure it was a great game. But the Falcons just, had a horrible game plan after they went up 28-3. After that point, they ran five times the rest of the game. Unbelievable to me that Freeman ends the game 11 rushes for 75 yards. How do you get, six, almost 7 yards per carry, six plus a carry, and only get 11 touches, only 11 runs? They were totally controlling the Patriots with the run. They went up 28-3. That's the time to run the ball. And they just buried it. I was in sheer shock watching how that unfolded. And it was just a slow, methodical comeback for the Patriots. And the Falcons gave them every opportunity, including all the time in the world to do it. I'm just watching Ryan on these long drop packs. What the hell is going on with that team? So it was pretty tough to watch. I was pretty sure the Falcons were going to win. We did call it at the beginning of the playoffs. And realistically, I do think the Falcons are the better team. And I think those two teams play 10 times, to me, the Falcons take 7.
Well, I saw on Monday morning before the Canucks departed on the road trip, Willie D, he referenced the Super Bowl. He talked about the Patriots. And I was thinking to myself, wouldn't that have been something if he had come out last night in Nashville behind the bench wearing a hoodie just to try to set the tone, try to channel his inner Belichick? And, this road trip, they need something. They got to mix it up a little. Willie behind the bench in a hoodie.
Oh, man, he should have brought up. I should ask about that. They did unleash their set play that Granlund scored the first goal on, and I was actually going to do a segment on this in the Province. Like, there was multiple times during the game where they ran that exact same play. So I think that they, you know, I tend to think that Willie was inspired by Belichick, and he said, "Damn it, I'm gonna come up with a great play here. You know, watch what I'm gonna do here. I'm gonna come up with this great face-off set design." And it worked once. It honestly almost worked. There was another play in the third where Edler had an opportunity off of it. I'm not sure Edler's the sniper that you want trying to pick a corner on that one. But he really liked that set play, and he wants his guys. I don't know what it means, but he wants his guys playing like the Patriots.
Well, Edler looked all right on the rush, on the power play goal set up by Horvat. So,
but why does Willie not see the offensive upside in goal?
I don't know. And how was that scored? Off the rush. Again, just off the rush. I mentioned that. Now that Berchi's out of the mix for a while, could it possibly be that 36 gets tapped on the shoulder?
It's not going to possibly be. We've already seen what happened. If Burrow's ahead of him, if Burrow's is ahead of Yannick on the pecking order of the power play, he's literally the seed that it could work. The only time, the end of last year, where he tried it a bit when they had all those injuries, and they had no other options, and they put him there. He's like, see, it didn't work. I put him out there for a couple of games, no goals.
All right, let's finish up here. Is this the end of the line for you on the road trip, or do you move on to Boston as well?
No, I'm covering this game in Columbus, and then I'm home. I'll be home Friday.
All right, so we'll podcast in studio next week or in the office. You asked the question on Twitter. I don't know what consensus was, but when do they win next?
I tend to think they win tomorrow. I tend to think, like, to me, the most, usually with the Canucks, it's like the most unexpected place. So I think that on this trip, probably the most unexpected win would be against the Jackets tomorrow. And I think that they're going to rally up and beat Torts.
All right. We're marking that one down. Botch has the Canucks in the win column against Torts. Torts got the better of them in Vancouver. 500th career coaching win, so not nearly as much at stake here this time around, but they do need a win if they think that they're going to stay within an arm's length of the wild card race. Podcast brought to you, as always, by Eagle Ridge GM and Coquitlam, proud sponsors of community hockey. Eagle Ridge GM, your one-stop car and truck center. Everybody's a part of their hockey family. You can find them online, eagleridgegm.com. If you're in the market for a new vehicle, please include Eagle Ridge GM in your search. They'd be happy to help you out. They're big supporters of ours, so we need you to support them as well. EagleRidgeGM.com. Botch, enjoy your time in Columbus, Ohio, and we'll see you when you get home. That is a podcast for another week with Jason Botchford joining us from the road. If you enjoyed the podcast, by all means, we ask that you share it on social media. Spread the word. Help us spread the word about the podcast. We're here each and every week on Province Radio, and we look forward to seeing where the Vancouver Canucks are in the Western Conference wildcard race and where they are in the big picture as far as the trade deadline is concerned when we reconvene to do this again next week. Thanks so much for listening to the podcast here on Province Radio.